The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to this week's Breaking Banks. Today I wanted to delve into the great unbanked question. You probably heard the figures previously. I have discussed them on the show in the past. The World Bank, it was reported in about 2011, the World Bank said that around 60% of the world's population, at the time it was around 64%, I think, were unbanked, did not have access to basic financial services, a basic bank account. Now, since then, those numbers have improved slightly, but not dramatically such. We still have a situation where the bulk of the world's poor, if you're looking at country or the continent of Africa, for example, or sub-Saharan Africa or the Middle East, you have 70 to 80% of the poor do not have access to basic banking functionality. Now, in recent times, we've started to see some concerted efforts at changing this. The big problem is, of course, that if you take a market like the United States, while we recognize the fact that portion of the market in the United States remains unbanked, and if you take the FDIC data, it's about a quarter of U.S. households, you would think that in a modern economy where the economy is improving, where technology and access to banking is getting easier, that that would result in that number of people being banked increasing, or the number of people that are unbanked decreasing. But that's not what has happened in the United States over the last few years. In fact, the number of people who have become unbanked or have detached themselves from the traditional banking system has actually increased in the short term. So this is not a problem that is unique just to emerging markets, countries like Africa, continents like Africa or Asia, countries like China, India, the Philippines, Indonesia, or Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa. This is a problem that we need to address also on a global scale, even within developed economies. Fair and equitable and affordable access to the banking system for everyone should appear like it is a basic right. And this is sort of the United Nations play on this. But banks, at the end of the day, are commercial institutions that have to make a profit. So how do we fix the inequity in the system? So at this point, I'd like to invite John Owens to join the conversation. Now, John, you've been heavily involved in the push for financial inclusion, not only in places like the Philippines, where you've lived over the last few years, but throughout ASEAN, throughout Asia, into Africa, somewhat in the Middle East. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing. I know you're about to start a new role, but tell us a bit about what you've been doing the last couple of years. Introduce yourself and tell us about what comes next for John Owens.
Okay. Well, thanks, Brett. And I'm very happy to be joining the program today. I've spent the last 25 years of my life working on basically increasing access to financial services for poor and low-income households all over the world, starting out actually my career in the Caribbean, then moving on to Latin America. I worked in Bolivia for a couple of years, and then, of course, Asia. In the Philippines for the last 14 years, and then on and off in various other locations throughout Asia and Africa. I think the reason you invited me here was basically One of the areas that we saw as an opportunity when working on increasing access to banking services was the power and the influence that mobile could provide for financial access. I guess one of our claims to fame was our team helped to conceptualize the first mobile loan payment system about a year before M-Pesa was ever launched in the Philippines, working with small rural financial institutions, rural banks, that partnered with a mobile money operator to be able to offer actual banking services, savings, deposits, withdrawals, money transfers, simple payments, and the ability to make or receive or pay for a loan using a mobile wallet.
So this was in what, 2007, 2008?
Actually, this was we started in 2005.
Right.
So it was actually a full year before. Actually, our first approval to the central bank went in late 2004, and our first pilot test started in 2005, about 6-7 months before M-Pesa pilot had launched. Yep. on a similar initiative. So I've seen this sector grow rapidly. I've had the opportunity to go out and work with a number of institutions, also worked in Nigeria a little bit. I visited Bangladesh, and I've seen the Bcash, which has opened up over 7 million accounts in a little over a year and a half, using primarily the mobile channel alone at a rate we've never seen anywhere, even faster than we've seen the growth of M-Pesa in Kenya, and directly through the mobile channel and through agents. So it's amazing. The opportunities are there. And I think when we look at, the whole area of financial inclusion, the mobile plays a very, very important role.
Great. So tell me about what effect the introduction of the phone as a payment vehicle or a payment instrument or enabler had in the Philippines, because you were involved at the groundwork for this. Was that with Globe and Smart? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. We basically had worked with Globe and Smart. And, I think in the beginning when a lot of people looked at mobile money services, mobile money, the way it started out in a lot of places is basically, a form of mobile money transfer, kind of like a Western Union transfer, but on a phone. People could send money to each other. But we soon realized that the real power was when you could actually make that to do financial transactions. So this included not only access to a bank, but the ability to either make a payment or receive money from somebody else to accept the payment remotely. So you can imagine, I've met farmers who were able to deliver their goods to the market instead of having to go back to the market to collect. They could stay in their field and receive their payment via mobile phone. Now, you and I do everything, here in the U.S. on people have access to the Internet. But for most of these people, they don't. And you still have basic cell phones, so they don't even have smartphones. So we had to look at a way to be able to facilitate payments through a phone. It can be very, very powerful and really help a lot of people. I've seen, people do all kinds of businesses, being able to accept, not all, but at least expanding their business horizons outside of their basic community by being able to accept mobile payments and end up being much more productive in the meantime, just like, a business that would be able to accept a payment online, could sell things online. These people could now do so on a phone.
Now, given that the phone has become so influential in solving this problem, or so instrumental in solving this problem, and given that, we take the big initiatives that you talked about, in Bangladesh with Bcash, in the Philippines, Globe and Smart, in Kenya with Safaricom, we do see a reoccurring theme here, which is that it appears to be easier for mobile operators to deploy these mobile money solutions than banks, at least initially.
Yeah, at least initially. I think, we do see a few exceptions. The exceptions would be Bcash in Bangladesh has no involvement of a mobile money provider at all. It's completely right. done by a bank. But again, they were a subsidiary of BRAC Bank, which had a very large microenterprise, or small, poor, customer base, very large, one of the largest in Bangladesh and one of the largest in the world. And they were able to build on that base to be able to develop a very rapid agent network. They now have over 70,000 banking agents, many more than all the bank branches and ATMs, and they were able to do that in a little over 2 years. That outreach helped them to dramatically expand services to open up accounts for 7 million people in such a rapid fashion that couldn't have been done before. And this was completely led by the bank. They utilized USSD channel connected to all the telecom operators, but have been able to do so successfully. In Pakistan, we've seen mobile network operators like Telenor that have invested in banks because the central bank only allowed banks to do it. But again, it was a partnership between a bank and telecommunications providers like Telenor. And this, you know, they also utilize the mobile channel and agent network to facilitate access to banking services. But I agree, in Africa, in East Africa especially, it has been primarily mobile operators for good reason. I mean, the infrastructure is not there. It's very difficult for banks to develop an agent network that's only focused on mobile banking just because, it's a chicken and egg situation. The value proposition isn't there. A telecommunications company, on the other hand, who can set up a licensed mobile money or e-money operator, an electronic money provider, similar to, you know, for Americans, it would be like setting up a PayPal type of service, getting a proper license, setting up a properly regulated subsidiary, can build on their existing branch network or their agent network, I should say. It adds as another service so they can operate and offer this very quickly. And they also have the customer base that the banks don't have. These are already customers of the banking sector. So it makes, or I should say, of the mobile network operators. So it does make it much easier for them than it would be for a bank because, again, these are their clients. The agent network is one that they can build very quickly.
So getting into a bit more detail around that, stepping back from the solutions that we've seen developed, in respect to financial inclusion, what's been the big problem in these markets in respect to getting a bank account in the hands of, you know, what we traditionally call the unbanked, which are overrepresented by the poorer income segments? What's been the issue? Why haven't they been able to get a bank account previously?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it had to do with originally the banking infrastructure just wasn't there. There are very few branches. I mean, you look at a country such as Ethiopia, for example. When you look at Ethiopia, the number of bank branches they have less than one bank branch per 100,000 people. Okay, that compares to Spain, where you have an average of 96 branches for 100,000 people.
So you've got
in a lot of these countries just very, very limited access to banks. In Latin America, we have seen agent networks that have been able to do this. But then again, a lot of the regulations, there's a lot of know your customer regulations that really require documentation the poor often have not had. Regulators and the, FATF are now looking at developing more of a kind of a tiered KYC process, and you see countries adopting that, like Mexico. So the regulators are coming on board now and setting up regulations that are making financial access, and including bank accounts, and these sort of e-money providers that are either banks or in some cases non-banks, who are able to open up very small value accounts using very simple KYC procedures. So in Nigeria, when I was there, with just your name and a phone number, you're able to open up a very small value account and start transacting using only your mobile phone. Of course, to get a SIM card in Nigeria, you need to be able to show some form of identification. So they sort of rely on that and the existence of that in order to be able to open up an account. But again, the KYC procedure is much, much simpler than the standard banking. So I would say those are the main issues, is just basically access points. And then the requirements. And for banks, it's also the cost of servicing very small accounts. It has traditionally been very, very expensive, and therefore they don't usually offer these services.
And the issue with the identity verification stuff, the lack of a formal identity document, is that mm-hmm. a big issue that we have to solve?
It is. And it is one that I believe we're beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel. As I said, if you asked me this question 3 or 4 years ago, I would have said, you know, it's very, very difficult for many of the poor, depending on the country, to be able to come up with acceptable forms of, the standard forms of identification. And much of this came out of, you know, the regulations, which became much stricter on money laundering, particularly after 9/11. That made it much more difficult, particularly in emerging markets. But I think there became a realization that these regulations were actually excluding a lot of people from the financial system. And the risk of excluding people is much greater than the risk posed by or the potential threat of any kind of money laundering for these types of very small value transactions. So, you know, as I said, FATF changed those rules just a few years ago, and central banks are now beginning to adapt that, you know, pretty much globally, and we see that, particularly in the group that I've been working with, the Alliance for Financial Inclusion, has done a great job, I think, of bringing regulators together and helping them to share experiences to look at financial inclusion. And one of the big ones is this issue of identification. So I think we're seeing central banks that are beginning to adapt to this, that are beginning to put measures in place, and banks that are beginning to react and respond to open up many more accounts and provide services. So I think the future, I see the light at the end of the tunnel.
From that regulatory perspective, who do you think, in terms of governance and regulation, you know, which countries have adapted to this quite well or have figured out the secret sauce? I mean, you did a lot of work in the Philippines. You know, would you hold them up as a good regulatory environment for financial inclusion in terms of addressing some of these issues?
Yes, I believe, you know, the Philippines has done a great job in terms of having addressing a lot of issues related to financial inclusion. This included, you know, liberalization of bank branches and what they call kiosks, or, you know, very small banking locations, the ability to have both bank and non-bank mobile money providers, or e-money issuers, they call them, electronic money issuers, again, that open up a lot of access points and the linkage between e-money issuers and banks. They've adopted a tiered KYC process for small value accounts, so somebody could come with, a small certificate from their local city council, even if they don't have a driver's license or passport or a proper birth certificate, to be able to identify who they are. And given the value of the account, at least they can start getting involved. So Philippines is one of the best examples that I'm aware of. Peru is, I just came from Peru. I was visiting the superintendent of banks there in Peru earlier this month. And I have to say they've done a very good job as well, really focusing on financial inclusion, really working on, you know, the regulatory framework. Mexico has done a great job on the tiered KYC process. You very, very little identification required for very, very small accounts. Nigeria is working on regulatory environment as well, and has done, moved up dramatically in terms of that. I think the results, we still have to wait and see. It's going to take some time for a country like Nigeria, but the opportunities are there, and I'd say, you know, we're beginning to see this one after another, quite a few countries. Namibia has just gone through this process of looking at helping with the tiered KYC. Rwanda is doing a great job. And Tanzania, where I'll be going, Tanzania and Kenya, I'll be going in the next, in February and March. Again, they're focusing a lot on the mobile channel and the opportunities of linkages between banks and other players.
It's amazing that when we start talking about financial inclusion, we're talking about those countries you've listed as being advanced economies, furthering the plight of the unbanked. But when you take an environment like the United States, it appears since 9/11, at least, exactly the opposite has occurred. So interesting to see what can the West learn from these more progressive economies who are doing some great things in terms of banking the unbanked. John, stick around. We're just going to have a quick break. But after the the next segment's with Zoeli from Standard Bank. But after that, I'd like to invite you back in the last segment to talk about the future of financial inclusion based around the mobile.
Great. Thanks, Brett.
You're with Brett King on Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this break.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking, with features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance. Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's kony.com/BK.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
You're back with Brett King on Breaking Banks. We're talking financial inclusion, Africa, other regions where the mobile is transforming the definition of what is a bank account. At this point, I'd like to invite Zoeli Manyathi. Zoeli is the CEO for personal and business banking for what the segment that Standard Bank calls the rest of Africa. Being based in South Africa, I'm guessing that Zoeli, you handle everything that's not South Africa for the personal and business banking.
That's correct, Brett. I look after anything south of South Africa, I mean north of South Africa.
Right, because there's not much south of South Africa. But
exactly.
Thanks for joining us from all the way from. Are you in Johannesburg today?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for joining us. We do appreciate it, and we appreciate it's getting into the evening there. So let's talk about how you guys, as one of the biggest banks on the continent, how do you view this issue of financial inclusion, and what are the hurdles, either from a technology or a regulatory or business perspective, that you guys have been working to overcome to improve financial inclusion in South Africa over the last few years?
Thank you, Brett. Thank you for inviting me. I think we will start by just acknowledging that our experience is that of ourselves is that we were largely set up to serve the top end of the market, middle and top end of the market, and as a result, the infrastructure that we built was on the basis of the average income that one had in those segments was substantially higher than we possibly can earn in what I call the bottom of the pyramid. And as a result, it became very challenging for us to serve this market. But what happened is that in 2009, in South Africa, there was a very, very strong call for financial inclusion. And what we then did was to sit back and think about what strategies we need to develop to make sure that, we can deliver to that part of the market. And we then introduced something called inclusive banking.
Inclusive banking? Inclusive banking, yeah.
Yes, inclusive banking. And the intent was to make sure that we rethink how we construct or configure financial solutions so that we include those people who were up to then excluded from the banking industry as customers. So we came up with a very, very basic transaction account that would have roughly about, you know, 8 transactions. And why 8 transactions? We actually sat back and we analyzed and we did the research as to really and truly how many transactions do the people in this segment, you know, want to do on a monthly basis. And we came up with a transaction that was very basic because we wanted to attack the cost of delivering.
So what did you see as that core bank account or that core requirement to support, to basically say, right, if we could do this, we have inclusion for these poorer, low-end customers?
Brett, the inclusion question was actually multifaceted in the sense that people were not using banks because they believe that banks are too costly, and therefore just to put your money into the bank and get it out was expensive, and we had to deal that. The second piece we had to deal was that we couldn't be talking about inclusion unless we challenged ourselves on how to extend credit in this market. And the third piece, which was much more internal for us, was in order to do all of these things, we need to have a cost infrastructure, an infrastructure that costs substantially less than our traditional branches, you know, are costing us. So we had to really rethink about also how to acquire customer, how to enroll customer, how to give the customer an account, where to think about that. So we ended up with a process that allowed us to automate the onboarding of clients, making use of smartphones and off-late tablets. And we therefore reduced the cost of acquisition of the client. And you can pass part of that cost back to the client in the form of lower fees.
Right.
And we also decided that customers actually don't have to come to the bank. And we then challenged ourselves to come up with a model that introduced us to the concept of what we call access banking points.
Yep.
The access points are, as in the case of M-Pesa and mobile money driven by MTN, those are agents out there in the market. But what we use is traders. You know, you've got traders who have got in their own homes, in their own garages, they've converted those into little shops. We call them in South Africa spaza shops.
Yep.
And they take money in. And because the most critical thing, when we looked at why do people in this segment come to the bank? They come to the bank because they want to deposit money or they want to take money out. So we then said, can we push the distribution points to the location where people are, so that they don't have to spend a lot of money getting into taxis, coming to the bank?
Right.
So we did that. We also introduced cell phone banking, so they can do transfers to their beneficiaries. And we introduced what we call My Updates. My Updates is an SMS message that comes to you once there has been a transaction in your account, either money coming in or going out. That saved a lot of people traveling to banks just to find out how much money they have in their accounts.
Right.
So we also introduced in South Africa, funerals are very expensive and people must have plans.
Funerals.
And funeral plans. Yes, funerals.
Yes.
And we introduced that for the market. So
that's that's a very interesting use case for financial inclusion, to be able to pay for a funeral. I never would have connected the two, but it's very interesting, Zawela. You spoke significantly about the cost of distribution, and one of the first things that you needed to do philosophically as a business was realize that if you use the old method, which is, well, we need a branch in this location to bank these people, you would never have got there. So you had to look at alternative distribution mechanisms.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you then, in terms of – sorry, you continue. Sorry.
I was just saying the economics of a branch, when you have got an average income per client as low as we are dealing, just wasn't
going to
work.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you spoke about cell phone banking and the ability to text or message them their balance and how this was an improvement in the distribution technology. What do you see for the future in terms of the phone's involvement in continuing to give access to financial services on the continent?
Brett, generally, we've seen massive adoption of mobile phones as a way initially of communication, and of late, the advent of the likes of M-Pesa and MTN's mobile money and the cell phone banking that we're using has actually changed the use of cell phone as just being an instrument to make calls.
Right.
It is a branch that you take with you. You know, it is your access to all your banking, and you take with you all the time, and you do your banking as and when you want to do it. So I suppose it's also an acknowledgement of what you always say, banking is what people do, not what people go to. You know, as and when they want to do it, they can do that in their phones. So going forward, what we've been working on, with the advent of smartphones, we have deployed banking apps in almost all the countries we operate in. And the reason we do that is to bridge, because for me, banking apps are almost an enhancement of what we used to deliver on cell phone banking, but and get closer to internet banking, but without the complexity of logging in the way we do on internet banking and all that stuff. So it simplifies things, because you simply tap into an app and you have got one verification point, and then you can do your transactions. So that gives people in the continent banking on the go as and when they want it and whenever they want to do it. And I'm glad to say that we've been able to deploy this in almost all the, we just, in 14 countries, we've got
14.
Right. And then we've got four to go, and we'll do that in quarter one next year, and everybody will then be on a banking app.
So in terms of the results that you've had, what would you say are the most, from statistically speaking or from a numbers perspective, what has been the standout results that you've had that you can point to that we did this and this was the impact of this in terms of financial inclusion on the population?
You know, Brett, the one thing that, the people in this segment have had a problem with was they always want to know whether somebody has paid money in the account as agreed or whether the salaries have gone in on the date that they expected to. Otherwise, what they do is they have to get into a taxi. That is expensive. Come to the bank and stand in a queue, only to ask for a printout of their statement to see if money has come in or not.
Yeah.
And they'll go into our ATMs and they'll push that card just to find out if the money has come in. By introducing my updates, what we have done is make people know in their own home or wherever they are, whether money is in or not in their account. That really saves them a hell of a lot of money. And because of that, it makes banking that much more affordable for them. And the second thing that we have done, we continue to challenge ourselves around how to deal with the regulatory environment, the Know Your Customer, in order to make sure that we have got a responsible but light version on the basis of the value of the money that flows through the account. We've been able to simplify in some countries this process and therefore makes it easy for people to access banking. But the regulatory environment does remain a challenge in some of the countries we operate in.
So this is, I find this fascinating. You guys are a bank that's, how old is Standard Bank, can I ask, Sorley?
We're 150 years.
Right, so you're a 150-year-old bank. Presumably in that time you've built most of the bank off the back of a branch network, at least for personal banking. And you guys came to the conclusion that the biggest hurdle to financial inclusion was someone jumping in a taxi to having to drive to a branch a significant distance from their home. And that was immediately going to discount them from having access to wishing to open a basic bank account. That you had to get over that hurdle first. And yet, in the West, you still have bankers who romantically view the facility of the branch, having access to the branch being this this basic component of banking. But for financial, when it comes to financial inclusion in Africa, you've had to rethink that model. Let me ask you then, how are people using their bank accounts? For these people that have previously not had access to banking, apart from paying for the funeral, what are the sort of things that they do with their basic bank account in sub-Saharan Africa then?
Brett, we have in some countries been able to, at the same time, deploy point-of-sale devices in big merchants. And the reason is that people must use less and less cash. They can go in and swipe and purchase their groceries, and that is happening more and more. We can just see the explosion in the volume and value of transactions that are coming via these POS devices. And therefore, we just tried to make it, we're trying to remove friction, if you like, as you put it. As much as we can. We want to make sure that the things that are not necessary for customers to do, we must actually facilitate the process that stops those processes. So you don't have to go to an ATM. If you are in that segment, it's not the preserve of the top end of the market for them to be able to take out their cards and swipe and buy groceries. Now these customers can do because the basic transaction product that we actually give them enables them to actually do that.
Great. Well, Zoeli, stick around. After the break, I'd like to talk about what happens over the next 5 to 10 years in Africa based on some of these innovations that we're seeing. And we'd like to invite John back as well. Thanks for joining the joining the show today from Johannesburg. You're with Brett King of Breaking Banks, and we'll be back right after this break.
Always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now toll free 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Game-changing technologies are transformational, exciting, and disruptive for a reason. They shake up the status quo. They get you thinking about new ways to scale, compete, and grow. They move you in amazing new directions. You're invited to take a coffee break with Game Changers on Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for our special series on today's top big data innovators. Learn about emerging big trends and technologies and how you can grow your business and profit. Startup Focus with Game Changers, presented by SAP on the Business Channel. In sales, are you a lion or a vulture? Lions don't wait, they just go for it. Vultures hang around until the lions are finished and just pick up the scraps. How can you set yourself apart as a lion? Join the other aspiring sales lions and listen to Forget Patience, Let's Sell Something with host Ty Maynor. You'll learn the tips and strategies of top sales professionals. You'll gain more clients at a faster rate and at higher margins. If you're a sales professional, business owner, or executive, listen in every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
So welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. Before the break, we were talking with Zoeli from Standard Bank. He's the CEO for the rest of Africa for Standard Bank. And we're talking about some of the significant changes that have taken place in terms of access to banking services that they've been enabling in that part of the world. Before that, we were talking with John Owens, who has been involved in financial inclusion and in this space for 25 years. So I'd like to invite them both back to the discussion now. And John and Zoeli, I would like to talk about where we go in the future, the next 5 to 10 years. The listeners of the show know this is sort of my where we put our futurist hat on and think about this. But I think it's ironic that you have in a market like the Philippines, or in the market like Kenya, for example, or now you know where the MTN network is, or Safaricom, or even Bcash in Bangladesh, where it's very easy now for me to take even a feature phone and just send money to a friend just by knowing the telephone number. Where in the US, you know, we still don't have the ability to do that stuff in real time with ACH. We're still dependent on things like checks. And you know, the US is supposed to be an advanced economy when it comes to banking. But these markets, when it comes to financial inclusion, are also building out functionality that in many respects is world class. So to get to the point of this discussion and why I wanted to have you guys on the show, it could be argued from a certain point of view that Africa is defining what the bank account will be in the future, and that drive to efficiency, that drive to inclusion, the more efficient mechanisms of distribution, all of those things are a benchmark for where we go in the future. So let me throw this to you, John. You know, in the next 5 to 10 years, where do you see this going, and how do you think that the things we're seeing in terms of financial inclusion improvements, how will they transfer to developed economies?
Well, good question, Brad. The main thing is, you know, I think what we are seeing is that We've seen this kind of shift back and forth. There was a lot of excitement about e-money in the beginning, and whether it would disrupt the whole banking sector. But I think now we're beginning to see the role that everybody plays. I think in the next 5 years, we're going to continue to see a greater convergence, more interoperability, interconnectivity between banks, particularly making use of mobile channels and mobile money or e-money operators that will be both banks and non-banks, but again, all interconnected, that are working with businesses, governments, and of course, the regulators to be able to make these things happen. I think we talk about the unbanked. There are five basic things that the unbanked need to be able to become banked and the services they demand. One is, they need a range of services that an e-money issuer or bank alone have not been able to provide up until now, which is credit, savings, money transfer, payments. We talked about just the ability to check your balance or get a simple statement. They also need flexibility of when to access that information, where to save, how to save, credit repayment schedules. Third, they need proximity and access with very low costs to doing this. Fourth, it has to be simple. It has to be easy to use. And easy for banks as well to provide small loans and low balance savings accounts, small value transfers, payments, even the ability, again, to check balances on the go. And then basic financial education or access to more information. And this is where the mobile provides a very, very important role. And I think, as you said, the trend to having more smartphones come out, particularly the Android phones that are becoming much more affordable to this end of the market, will really drive, I think, a richer involvement and range of services than we've been able to provide up until now. So I'm very optimistic, and I see a role for a lot of players and people coming together to make this happen.
Very good. Now, Zoeli, in terms of mix of business in a market like Africa, where it is hard to get physical distribution points, these branches, abundant enough locations to really provide that support, given the way you guys have adapted to this problem, what do you think the mix of business is going to be like in 10 years' time? Are we going to see a situation where you're going to have more people with a mobile phone, which is their primary bank account, versus a traditional plastic debit card?
Brett, I had recently an opportunity to talk to the heads of personal and business banking across the continent, as well as managing directors. And one of the questions or challenges that I posed to them was, can we grow this business phenomenally with the same number of branches that we have as opposed to adding branches? And I'm saying that because we have got smartphones that are coming through. I mean, the cost of technology, if experience is, or history is anything to go by, is that it's going to become, it's going to cost less and less.
Yes.
For the supplier to put a smartphone in the hands of the customer that we have. And if that is true, and if the functionality that we can build in our apps as we go forward, becomes a lot more intuitive, a lot more interactive. My view of it is that the explosion is going to be branch in my phone as opposed to branch in a physical bricks and mortar. So my sense of it is that we've got to continue to challenge ourselves on how do we add value and deliver seamless service to customers using the advances of technology. And I honestly believe that, the role of mobile by way of application is going to be that much more important for our distribution mix going forward. And I always get asked the question that says, so what then is going to be the role of the branch? My view is that branches, in the past I used to say branches will always remain, but they'll have a completely different function. The question is, if that function that I thought was going to remain in the branches can now be seamlessly and interactively delivered to customers using apps, I just cannot see the logic of having more and more and more branches. So I think, you know...
It's extraordinary to hear
devices.
A banker say that. I love it. And those guys who listen to my show regularly will know how much I love it. But all right, so let's sort of put our futurist hat on, you know, then in the future. And John, I'll throw this to you. Given the potential for this very low friction growth, based, you know, to include half of the world's population that hasn't had a bank account to date, suddenly these people becoming banked. How is that going to change the dynamic globally? Who is going to emerge at the end of this decade as some of the biggest banks in the world, do you think?
You know, this levels the playing field. I think it's open. Many of the events I've been at, you know, we said that, you know, the biggest player could be somebody completely new that doesn't even exist today. You know, you look at the rise of Apple. Who would have expected them to play the role that they do? And if you look at mobile payments, probably in the U.S., they're still one of the largest mobile payment providers with the number of people that may purchase an app on their phone. And who would have expected that, you know, 10 years ago? So I think, you know, this really levels the playing field. I think if you're sensitive to the needs of this huge untapped market, you have, you know, a new and sound business strategy that really looks at the whole branchless banking approach, and you're building on a technology framework, particularly one that integrates the mobile, which everybody is going to have in their hands, or which, you know, a significant percentage of the world population will have, you could gain in your markets an early mover advantage and transform the lives of, you know, millions of people. And I think we are going to see that. You know, who are the big players? Who knows? I mean, in China, look at China today. One of the largest providers today of payments and even becoming one of the largest providers of credit is Alibaba. Doing it all online, you know, and who would have suspected that a few years ago? So I think, you know, we've already got four markets in the world where the number of people with a mobile wallet account exceeds the number of bank accounts. And this is Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda.
Yeah, great. I was just going to ask you which they are. So just repeat them again.
Yeah, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and Madagascar. And you've got, I think, now it's well over 20, probably over 30 countries where the number of agents exceed the number of bank branches. And you know, that's growing rapidly. So the number of agent locations, whether they be agent banking or strictly kind of these, you know, mobile money agents, which could also facilitate, again, linkages to banks, like you see the Commercial Bank of Africa in Kenya, which linked up with Safaricom and opened up in, you know, in a period of just over a year, 3 million bank accounts using just the mobile channel and now providing credit services that M-Pesa couldn't provide before. And I mentioned the Bcash as an example. Tanzania today, I was with the Tanzania Revenue Authority the other day. They said the public were demanding for paying basic taxes like car registration, which would take a half a day process before. They had to go get their forms, go to the bank, wait in line, pay at the bank, and bring the receipts back to get their car registered. They moved to accepting mobile payments where it could all be done on the phone. You get your receipt virtually. Within 3 months, 80% of all their transactions today are all done via mobile money.
I love this. I love the fact that you've now got regulators that have figured it out in these markets and are pushing the banks and the infrastructure providers to enable this stuff. Whereas in a market like the US, we're still figuring out whether or not we should allow this sort of stuff. It's just incredible.
It is. It is. And I think, you know, this is the future. This is the one that we all see. And it's this growth of not just the mobile, but the whole digital financial services space. So as I said, it's broadening out to a range of different services and integration, even with typical payment providers. We won't be walking around with plastic cards, but I do believe, you know, there is a role for the Visas and the MasterCards in the future. And believe it or not, even American Express is linked up.
A whole different story, John. But look, thanks very much for joining the show. We hope to hear from you as you take on your new role in the future soon too. So, Ellie, just in the sort of last 90 seconds we've got left, tell me what Standard Bank is going to look like in 10 years' time.
Well, Brett, we're going to be a very completely different bank. Much more digital in everything we do. Even in the branches that remain, we're going to deploy technology that enables those who still want to come to the branch to begin to get used to it, and therefore the independence and the educatedness of our client is very, very important. And we've got to be part of that, and that's why we're going to be deploying this technology in our own branches to make sure that they begin to make use of it in the safe environment where, you know, our consultants and our associates are there to assist them. But Standard Bank is going to be a very different bank.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Zoeli, all the way from Johannesburg. I understand you're also on leave, on holiday with your family, so the fact that you've joined us is very much appreciated. You've been with Brett King on Breaking Banks. Yep, thank you, Zoeli. We've had Zoeli Manyathi from Standard Bank and John Owens speaking financial inclusion and the emergence of the mobile bank account. Thanks for joining us. Just after the new year, we'll be back with our first show, The Trends and Predictions for 2014, and Chris Skinner is joining us for that show, so it's one you should be sure not to miss. Thanks very much. I'm your host, Brett King. You've been on Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.